Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and again, you are at the right place time. Here at Progressive News Weekly, every week, weekend and week out, we bring you news and information called from around the world, typically in the United States and sometimes beyond the borders. But it's news that is intended to inspire you, encourage you, of course, to enlighten you, again, to uplift you, to instill you to get involved and truly make a difference. It's news, we say, that you can use. It's news for you, by you, and of you. And it's no coincidence that that little antidote aligns with our Constitution. Although, I think many of us would say from time to time that, well, it doesn't appear that way in terms of the Constitution, that is. Because so often our citizens are disenfranchised. There's the have and the have not. And it's not to say that, well, that's not taking place around the world. But it also doesn't mean that it's something that has to be tolerated or that it's right, that it's good. So what we here at Progressive News Weekly seek to do is to bring some sense of balance, some sense of equilibrium to the fold. And that's why week in and week out, week by week, we bring you this news that you don't typically hear on mainstream media. We're not skewed or influenced by political or business interest. We bring it straight to you, undiluted, no chaser, and we bring it live. We encourage you, the listener, to become a participant. And so we encourage you to call in and contribute or at least comment on the discourse. By many standards, the topics and or guests controversial. However, we're comforted in that our guest and or topics are real and validated. So when you hear it here, as the saying goes, you can take it to the bank. Typically, when we bring you information, especially something that you don't typically hear elsewhere, we'll give you references as to where you can validate the information as a untypical of a piece of knowledge as it may be, or controversial even more so. You can vet the information. And what I mean by vet, well, for those of you who don't know, is you can follow up on it and validate it. This evening, no exception, I'm pleased to have a frequent guest of Progressive News Weekly joining us. And get on our mail list. And if you're on the mail list, share the mail list with a friend or a loved one or a colleague. If you're tuning in, well, there's a reason for that. Why not share that? And you can do so not just by necessarily forwarding the email that you receive from me on a weekly basis in our weekly update news brief of our upcoming program. You can simply have them drop me an email. And that way they can also impact future programs, because we look to you, the listener, participant, for upcoming dialogue and discourse by bringing us topics and or guests that need to hit mainstream, that will not hit mainstream by the typical media. So have them or you send me an email to Darryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore, C-L-A, 1-8, N.com. That's Darryl, underscore, C-L-A, 1-8, at MSN.com. And I will certainly add you to the mail list. And at this point in the program, you'll know who it is that's going to be our upcoming guest. So with that said, this evening we'll be joined shortly by Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. Crenshaw is a research journalist by many standards. He is a historian. He's a political insight, and I say insight because he doesn't delve into politics from a left-wing or a right-wing perspective, but just strictly down Prospect Avenue, by some standards, First Street, or that main road that runs through your town. So it's unbiased. This evening, with so much going on in our society, not just from a political front, but just from a societal front and the evolution of mankind, what's happening in our towns, in our communities, in our cities and states, in our nations, specifically our nation here in America, we're going to be highlighting some things. And with that energy that we're going to generate, we're looking to make a difference, to make a change. So we don't walk away with just some talking heads that have taken place and some sound bites for your eardrums. The idea is to walk away with the knowledge and share, have some discourse of the like with friends, loved ones, colleagues, family, and let the energy germinate. Let the good energy germinate. So we're going to talk about a litany of topics that are going on right now. There are some things on mainstream. I try to stay away from mainstream because it's so misleading. And if you're not careful, you get caught in one stream or another. What I mean by that, they're so polarizing. You can go to Fox or One News, One America News, or you can go to MSNBC, or you can go to CNN, and you're going to get just streams of information. And so in order to get any piece part of knowledge, you really need to listen to a little bit of each, or you can just come to real information here on Progressive News, which is unbiased, and have it straight, no chaser. Have your input. Help create the real information. I don't even like using the word news anymore. Breaking news. Everything is breaking news. Now, you ever notice that on the mainstream, whether it's CNN, CBS, NBC, or ABC, or whatever it is that you happen to maybe come across, everything is breaking news, you know. The wagon rode down the driveway and hit the cat. Breaking news. And we have to stop being played like that. There's too much at stake. You know, the evolution of our society is in our hands. Those who are listening right now, it's in your hands, literally. Young or old, if you're tuning in right now, you have a stake process, a future process. So no talking heads here on Progressive News Weekly. If that's what you're looking for, you're at the wrong place at the wrong time. But I don't believe that's the case. So let's move forward with Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. Just a little bit about his background. Most of our regular listeners know who he is. But for our new listeners, as I mentioned, he's an activist for human and equal rights. He's a research analyst. He's a journalist. He's a historian. He's been at this for numerous decades. You know, that crusade for that which is right and righteous. Evening, we're going to be talking about some of the inequities going on and what some of the sources may be. This, what I like to call critical thinker that we have joining us this evening, through his well-researched and derived insight to the issues impacting our society, he's going to provide us with provocative information that is not typically heard on mainstream media. And to give you an example, much of his inspiration for his body of work for over three decades stems from the works of notables such as a Paul Robeson. Without further ado, let's get into some of what's going on in our societal climate with Mr. Ronald Crenshaw. Mr. Crenshaw, are you there?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much. I'm doing well. And, yes, I, you know, would like to make some input in what you're saying. I don't think I can live up to the praises you have given me, but I will struggle to do that.
You're so
because,
modest. Stop it.
Yeah, but I mean, I do my best to come forth and be, you know, kind of equal and not, you know, put all the blame on just one side, because I feel that the things that go on, of course, are part of our humanity, and we like to, at least, I think we should try to struggle to better our humanity. That's where, you know, that's my starting point. Because, you know, none of us are perfect, but we can make things better, and we have to struggle for that. That's my, you know, preamble, so to speak, of what I'm about, and that's where things, you know, for me are in grappling with what's going on. Do you want me to speak about some particular area?
Yeah,
about,
if you don't mind,
you know,
what I'd like to excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Mr. Crenshaw. First of all, just a little bit about your preamble. You know, you came right out the chute, knocking, from my perspective, knocking the ball, you know, right just over the home run line, and that was just warming up, because you made a profound statement. More profound than I think you even realize sometime, and I've been knowing you for a decade at least, and you never fail to amaze me in your modesty and humility, but yet in your profound critical thought. You said it's not about humanity. None of us are perfect, but all of us can make things better.
Right.
You realize,
exactly.
You know, people pay large dollars, you know, politicians, for statements like that.
Right.
But you meant it from your heart. So, yes, I'm gonna, as we have in the last several years, you are a regular listener. You've proven yourself, your thought acumen. So, as always, I'm going to hand you the mic. But before that, I do want to kind of stimulate our listeners' mindset with something that's been on my mind, and I try not to get into mainstream, but I would like your perspective, and then after this question, I'm going to turn the mic over to you, because the general topic for this evening is the evolution, what's happening in our society, and have we truly evolved? And I guess the answer is probably yes, but then I want you to kind of weigh on that, you know, to what extent, at a reasonable pace, should we be further ahead in society? And if we should be, then why aren't we? So I'm going to lay that on you as sort of a backdrop as the topic, and I'd like you to get into a little history, if you will, that leads up to that. So, but before you do that, could you just touch upon, and again, for the fourth time, I don't like to do politics. However, would you weigh in what your thoughts are about Russiagate? You know, we're talking about that Mueller report that has been so-called pending for, well, I want to say since our current president's been in office, I say over 2 years. So a lot of money, I suspect, has been put into it. But what's your thought? I mean, it came out, and of course the president is gloating that, you know, see, and you know, spent all the money, and then the Democrats are, of course, saying, yeah, but it wasn't, you know, definitive in terms of, you know, what the conclusion was. What's your general feeling about all this?
My general feeling, excuse me, is that my general feeling is that the United States feels that it's losing ground. You know, with all this Russiagate and stuff like that, is a matter of trying to make themselves stronger than they think they are, because they feel a competitiveness with Russia and China. And China is gaining on the United States in terms of wealth. And that's a big challenge to them, to the United States. The United States right now is not, does not have a very stable economy. That's the big thing. That's why they dropped the corporate tax from 35 to 21%. That's taking money from the general welfare of the people, and also the taxing of working class people has risen also. These are things that they feel that they need at the top so that they can shift things from their point of view to keep ahead. So, you know, in other words, we've never really come out of the 2008 to 2010, so to speak, downfall. It's, you know, it came up, but it's not stable. And that's what's, you know, that's why we have Trump. But Trump is not, he is really not a very stable person. And I'm surprised that they picked him, but I see that they wanted someone who's cold-hearted. And that's the way he is, you see what I mean? And they can put him in place whenever they want to, but he was their chosen person. And when I say chosen person, I mean just what I said. We don't vote presidents in. They are selected in. Okay, it's because that's the way an empire has to operate. It can't be a democracy. It can be give the appearance of being a democracy, but it can't really be, because it has to lie in order to correct foreign situations. I mean, look at how the United States treats the Palestinians. They give the Israel all of the necessary equipment to keep the Palestinians, you know, in a dilapidated manner, you know, oppressive and brutal. And, you know, you see how he has acted. And even here, he's against the he's against giving adequate welfare to maybe I shouldn't use the word welfare, because it's really not fair. You know what I mean? It's they're due, I should say, for improving their conditions and the poor in general here. So we have a. What I'm trying to say is, can you hear me still?
Yeah. I think I know you're hearing. I think you're telling, or she's getting ready to explain to us that this is a bigger picture than most people even perceive. But I don't want to,
right.
You know, presume. I want to let you go ahead and complete your thought. So you've got the mic.
Yes. Okay.
The program is now in your hands.
Okay. So this is what I am generally saying, is that there's a lot of cruelty that has to go along with this, because it's not a matter that race is, race is the basis of, you know, white over black. It's really the economic system that demands that a bifurcation between the working class, meaning between whites, so-called whites, and so-called blacks. since nobody is really white, nobody is really black. But, you know, we have that kind of connotation going on. So, anyway, that's important so that people who are poor don't come together. One feels superior to the other when it's to their own detriment. Because who is the one who's, you know, really on top of the super wealthy? So they will, you know, just like the people who, they put a black in a high place, like in the, oh boy, come on, Ronald.
Like our president, for example, our previous president?
Yeah, right.
That would be a prime
President Obama. Right. I wasn't thinking of him. I was thinking of the Supreme Court, but that's okay, because the reason I was going after the Supreme Court was that the black person they put there is extremely conservative, so he doesn't meet the requirements for helping poor people. You see, and that's the general thing. Now we can move to Obama, because Obama also had to follow the spectrum of being conservatives in a very neat kind of way. Neat meaning, you know, he had to appear that he was pro the public while still conservative, you see.
Yeah, very true. Interesting.
Well, go ahead, I'll hold my questions. Continue. Yeah. You have another question, or...
I didn't want to interrupt you. I can hold my questions until your thought is completed. So continue your thought. But I do have a question about that, or a statement about what you were just saying with the whole conservatism of Obama, because some people don't understand that. That how can he's a Democrat, how can he be conservative? But anyway, go ahead.
Right. Well, you know, it's really a one-party system, because both parties' ultimate allegiance is to the capitalist system. And the capitalist system is in no way a friend of the working class. No way. Okay? I mean, just any question you put, I can counteract it when you come to the point of saying that there's this, that, and the other that's good. Well, you know, it's like giving nickels and dimes when there's trillions of dollars on top. So that's what I mean by that. But anyway, Obama went to Detroit when they had the poison water going into the black areas, and it spilled over into some white areas too, because, I mean, there's whites there in Detroit. So he didn't make any criticism. He just praised the governor and praised the mayor. When these guys should have been put in jail. You know,
I think he even drank the water on television or something, didn't he?
Yeah, the water was chemically bad. And they just, you know, they didn't care, you see.
Yeah.
And also, the people were asking for a single-payer health insurance. He said he couldn't do that. He gave us Obamacare. Well, Obamacare is good, but it's not good enough because of the fact that at some points you really have to pay a lot of money to be in a hospital. Okay, you have to pay a very lot of money, you know, thousands of dollars. We need it, and we could afford a single payer in this country. But hey, the rich got to stay as rich as possible. So all of this with Russia is really kind of trying to keep people off point as to what really is going on. See, and the all the cop murders of innocent non-white people were really never addressed properly. you see. So, yes, some got penalized, but very few. So we're not in a democracy in any sense of the word. Well, that's my principal statement. I'd like to hear your question.
Okay. I think I understand what you're saying, that it is a one-party system, and it's not about left or right. It's about capitalism. And,
right.
And it's about class.
Right, and class.
And I'm not talking
exactly.
about class like we go into a classroom.
No.
I'm speaking of class in terms of a segment of society that you or someone or anyone falls into. And,
yeah, more privilege.
You know,
more privilege
that's
given
right.
to one
and
than the other.
Exactly. And we're becoming
yeah.
a classed and caste society. And we used to, well, when there was something called civics, which some of my old school listeners
right.
might remember, which
yeah.
doesn't even exist right now. It's like
right,
taking music
right.
out of the school system or taking chess or fencing or gym out of the school system. But these things have strategically been removed because we have to be dummied down, as I know one of your hot buttons is, because you have to have labor. So you cannot have but a certain level of intellect in society under the system that we are under right now. So I get that. But I'm not sure, speaking on behalf of many of our listeners, I believe, if the listeners or some segment of the listeners understand that one party piece that you're referring to. I did appreciate
right.
the example that you gave when you said, you know, they had to have a Trump. So, you know, that's another thing I wanted to kind of break down, which is, you know, the they-ism. And I think that ties back to that one-party system that you're referring to when you said they. It's as though it's not about government for the people, by the people. They may
right.
perpetrate that it's of the people because these are citizens,
right.
but they're
right.
not of an average class.
Right.
They're of a segment of their own. So the they
yes.
are the leading capitalist. You can't
yes.
run for president unless you're a millionaire. I think everyone,
exactly.
or at least 90% of our listening audience
right.
And those who have any maturity understand that. And so
yes.
when you say that our former President Obama was basically doing as he was told in the single-party system, I wasn't sure if they understood that because you said he was conservative.
Yes.
Is it that he was conservative or that term conservative versus liberal, or is it that there is really no liberalism or conservatism? There is just the one mindset as it stands now. And I mentioned, we were talking some time ago about this mullet case and
yes.
And how he got off. And I think it's widely acknowledged that the reason he got off is because of his economic status. I think that's the one thing that everybody agrees with, right or wrong.
Yes.
I think there's some questions about, well, look, you know, if it were a white guy,
yes.
it wouldn't even have gotten this far. He would have been pardoned a long time ago. I mean, there are those who would say that. But because he was black,
right.
he had to get strung out, and he almost got, you know, he almost got himself in a situation where he was going to do some time. But due to his financial background and his celebrity status, well, just like we're seeing right now with this whole thing coming up with R. Kelly, for example.
Yes.
We don't know where that's going to head, but we do know that he walked out of jail with someone paying a bail into
right.
six figures. And
uh-huh.
and so we understand when we see these things, what you're saying, when you say it's a one-party system, folks, and it's becoming a class, well, actually it has become to some extent a class and caste society. What that means is, I remember there was a book that my mom, she was a fervent reader. Oh, she had stacks of books. And I remember one, Class and Caste of Society. And it was really just saying that there are societies, and this was 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and the perspective was there are societies where you're rich or poor, and that's a shame. And we would think in terms of India and some of the third world countries. Well, folks, America is leaning in that direction very quickly. And
that's
so,
right. That's right.
And so this one-party system that I believe Mr. Crenshaw is talking about is leaning toward that, which is why I believe you gave the example of our previous dear President Obama, but you didn't stop there because you don't want to think people are bashing him because he was black, because you got those people to say, well, they're blacks, they're just jealous. And I don't believe that's where you are, knowing your passion for humanity. It's not about that prejudice, you know, bigoted, you know, kind of thinking.
Oh, no.
Because you can be bigoted
no
and
way.
Be black. No, it's not. No, no.
Right.
I know that knowing you. Because then you gave another example. Wait a minute. Let's just look back over the past five presidents. We're just going to be nice. We could go back probably to the last 10 or more.
We
or
could
actually
go back to
Roosevelt. 40. We can go back to the 45th. I knew you were going
to
go there.
Back to
I'm
Roosevelt.
Talking to a historian, folks. I am talking to a historian, and I just slipped on that one, boy. He was going to say,
no, you didn't slip.
Robbie.
You didn't slip.
You
that was good.
Hey, I walked
just
into that one, right, Ron? Okay.
No. You weren't that. No. I don't mean that. No. I don't mean it that way. Because when I say we have, we have a one-party system, what I mean by that is that the basis of our culture rests on people who have wealth and privilege. That wealth gives them privilege, and therefore they control the system as it is, because they control the manufacturing. All of the manufacturing is controlled by them. The banks, all of that is controlled by them. They make things available to us because it facilitates and maintains their wealth. You see what I mean? So it maintains their wealth to keep us thinking and giving us little bits of privilege here, there, somewhere else, giving us wage increases, which are minimal, okay, because they don't interrupt their health, you see, because, in other words, dropping the tax for corporations from 35% all the way down to 21%, who is that helping? That's helping the people who are already rich. And who does that hurt? The people who don't own the means of production. See, the wealthy own the means of production, but not the workers. You see, yet it is the workers who create the wealth that the wealthy holds on to and does it by law.
See, which they
see
get
what I'm
by
saying?
Having privilege.
They have it by law.
Mm-hmm.
So when I someone, they pay me a minuscule amount of what I've created for them.
Mm-hmm.
See, and
mm-hmm.
that's legal. See, that's legal. I can't say anything about it. I can, you know, get start a labor organization to give us some kind of minimal salary and things of that sort. But as soon as we know that they started taking deindustrialization, for instance. Deindustrialization was that the United States now could go to other countries with their factories to make more for cheaper labor than they were making here. You see, so cheaper labor starts to come, they start to make wealth from themselves from taking industry out of the country, making labor here more poor. You see, that's what I mean about the really one party. It's really the capitalist party, because to be a capitalist, you own wealth, you own industry. Am I clear now? You own industry.
Mm-hmm.
You own, you have General Motors, going to China. Well, General Motors goes to China, but when it goes to China, then more of the understanding of what they do and how they work things goes into China. And eventually it becomes equal to the United States. You see, in other words, their incessant desire for more profit, spills out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, that's what the wealth does to one. They can't get enough. Being a trillionaire, just $1 trillion is not enough. They have to keep getting more and more, because whatever they get, they can lose. And that's what makes it a one-party system. In other words, yes, they're in other words, the Democrats, working class, notice they say softer, but the Republicans want to be harder. But it still rests on whether the wealth is going to be maintained at the top and don't go to the bottom. That's what I mean about one class. You see, in other words, it's people on the top that run the show. So yeah, we get money to live, to be able to live, to continue the process which is ongoing. But it's more to their advantage than it is to us, because it is we who fight the wars. We who get maimed and killed in the wars that they create.
As you said, it's us that engage in the labor that allow the privilege to do better.
Some backdrop on this talking that I'm doing, because I notice I'm getting a lot of pushback on my internet system,
mm-hmm.
on my, email stuff, pushing me aside and stuff like that. But I don't care. I really don't care, because I can't hold all this stuff inside.
You have to tell the truth.
And people can see what's happening. I mean, this late 2018 tax process is hurting more of the poor rather than those at the top. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. And I know as a finance guy and a tax preparer, and so I know you understand that. And I was going to ask you as part of the question set that I have, what are you seeing with the new laws? Because I know you've been doing the finances and the tax and consulting for decades. What's happened with the tax laws? These aren't laws that were just brought up, though, right, by this current administration. Usually those things are projected by the previous administration and then enacted years later. So that goes back to the one-party system. Many of what we're seeing now was put in place by Obama, and I'm asking you as a professional. I'm not asking you rhetorically. Is that the case, Mr. Crenshaw?
Yeah, well, let me say this, too. Presidents in the United States don't make political policy. It is the think tanks. And who owns the think tanks are the super wealthy. So in other words, presidents actually are the mouthpiece for what they want to go forward.
Is that the same
you
with fiscal
me?
Policy as well?
No, he doesn't make it. He's the mouthpiece.
for both
the
fiscal
president
and political policy? Because the two,
right,
of course, are different. I mean, the fiscal policy, your financial, you know, talk about taxes and write-offs,
right,
and those,
right,
kinds of budgetary items. For example, there's a budgetary item that was put in place. You know, I work in a government arena for public housing for those who are low income. And so I keep on, you know, some of the projected or proposed legislation. And, you know, of course, the head of housing, Carlson, the doctor, I would say the good doctor, but I would be kind of tongue-in-cheek. So he's proposing like billions of dollars in cuts, you know, to some of the social programs. But those aren't going to happen this year. I mean, they're saying, you know, in 2020, by 2020, they want these. So, you know, our current president may not be in office. And so what I'm saying is the same thing with the previous president. I mean, the things that he's proposed are would just be coming into play in the last year or two, even though he's not there. So the things that,
right,
a president puts in place fiscally and politically often don't take effect until years later. That's been my understanding. Is that not the case, Mr. Crenshaw?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah, that was not rhetorical again. That was an actual,
right,
question.
Okay.
Is that not the case, that they propose legislation for years ahead? I mean, they'll say, you know, for example, the minimum wage, we're going to pass the law. Okay, the law's been passed, but it may not take a place for 4 years, and it may ramp up. So they may say, okay, right now the minimum wage is $12, and I'm making this up. And they may,
right,
say, we're going to get that up, and somebody runs for governor and says, in this state, we're going to have a minimum wage of $17, and that's what I'm proposing. And then he passes a law, and it hits the newspaper mainstream that it was $17. He did it. But if you look at the details, the 50 pages of legislation, because these are, for the most part, attorneys that run for political office, or their think tanks are filled with attorneys, and those laws are, you know, often they're giving up things to get that. And they're brought in to action, active functionality over a period,
right,
of years, and,
right,
sometimes extending beyond their term in office before,
right,
they're actually enacted. So I'm just saying that,
right,
often things that we experience are things that were initiated by previous administrations, whether it's local, city, state, or federal. Is that
true,
not the case?
That's true. That's true.
And that ties back to the one-party system.
Yeah,
because if,
right,
a Republican puts in legislation, unless it's totally redacted by the following, say, the Democratic political leader, then those things will begin to take place down the road. So that's why it's so important that we become very astute with regard to our political climate and what's going on. I mean, many people,
right,
didn't realize that Bill Clinton incarcerated more African Americans than any other president in the history of the United States.
Right. That's right.
Anything close. And
he was a Democrat.
There were many that were calling him the first black president because he blew a saxophone,
right,
on my homeboy Arsenio Hall's television show. So
we have to be
able to see through the mirrors, the smoking glass, the rainbow. Go ahead, Mr. Crenshaw.
And who spotted that? Who was the person that implemented that, the praise on Clinton? It happened to be a black congressman from New York that put that on him.
Hmm.
Okay? You want to know which one?
Another Democrat. You know that's my next question. Yes.
Oh, boy. Shame on me. Rangel.
Just relax.
That's it. Rangel
really?
Put that. Yes, Rangel did that.
One of the most
ineffective. He wanted to, you know, get up in the system. Because, see, and that shows also.
One of the most political persons I've ever seen in my life.
Huh?
I just, folks who don't know who, he was a senator, right? Rangel?
Rangel, no, he
was
a congressman.
He was a congressman,
House.
Okay.
House.
He was in the House, okay. But,
right.
Boy, you talk about what did he do. I mean, what he did, he was black. And he was a congressman in Harlem for 20 years, at least 10, right?
Yeah, but he was also the one who was working on getting rid of Adam Clayton Powell. Okay.
Now, see, that's one I didn't know about. That's
well,
that's
you're
dude.
Not
that's
supposed
dude
to know
right there.
You're not
that's
supposed to know.
I gotta put my, hold on for a minute while I
you
put.
See
my
what I mean?
You
don't think it's your fault. You're not supposed to know. The media is controlled, lock, stock, and barrel.
Now
the
I know
media.
You know this because you're a New Yorker, so I know you know the story
right.
on this one, especially being
right.
a historian.
They show what they
Whoa.
Want you to. To know, they didn't, look, we talked about, in the past, we talked about the Vietnam War, and then I said things came out, leaked out, after the war was well over, and it leaked out that, and I had Pentagon Papers by Daniel Ellsberg put it out because he was an inside guy who worked with the RAND Corporation, think tank for the political echelon, you know, the people that really run the country, who you know, who owns this. Just like the there are several think tanks, and some are controlled by Rockefeller, some are Morgan, you know, various super wealthy guys. And that's, I mean, that's the, they told us one thing, that the destroyer was shot, you know, was attacked the ship, the little boats from the Vietnam. And that was a lie because the destroyer is the one that fired on the junkets, that's what they call them, the junkets.
Yeah,
the
junkets.
Vietnam junkets, you see, to start the war because they saw that the French weren't able to do the bidding, and that's what Dr. King came out with. He went down the line and enumerated just how the United States, how involved the United States was in getting the woo with the Vietnam conflict while the French were fighting. They supplied all of the weapons needed for the French to try to win Vietnam, and they just couldn't do it. So the United States said, well, we'll have to do it because we don't want that area to be communist. That's the demon. See, that's the demon. But then the demon also becomes the tie, you know, the antagonism between capitalists themselves. I mean, that's what happened with the First and Second World Wars, where each one group had risen to the top, which was Nazi Germany. Well, Germany first, Nazi in the Second World War. But Germany, he saw that they were outproducing England. So they said, we need more Lebensraum, meaning we need more colonies. And it seems like England has them all, and we want some of them. We want to take it. So, and that's what they tried to do. And the United States came over to help, you know, in the First World War and had to, of course, help in the Second World War. But the reason for the Second World War was how they treated the Germans after the First World War. They made them, put them into poverty. So once somebody comes forth, like Hitler, who is, you know, very, what's the word for it, dynamic in speaking and had this idea that we're going to do it because our ability, our coming to forth with industrial advancement, we were, you know, outproducing England and steel and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of industrial advancement was coming from Germany. So they say, hey, we should take this. And that's the way it goes. So it's that constant, you know, I got to get it. I got to take it. I got to take it all. You see what I mean? And that's what we need to get out of. And it's not, it's not racial. It's part of our humanity that we have to struggle with as humans. You see what I mean? That's the coin that we have to. It's not racial. It's something in our humanity that we have to struggle with, and we have to see it that way. And we can't just blame people because they look a certain way, you know. They have slant eyes, so they can't be equal to those who don't have slant eyes. You see what I mean? That's not that's not where the problem is. The problem is how do we get to an economy, a political economy that's willing to share with each other. That's what we have to struggle for, to share with each other, because we don't have to have all this so-called wealth stacked up at the top. We share it, and we don't have to have such a, you know, so much hostility, and because we're going to eliminate the species ourselves. Just as way, you know, the dinosaurs went, well, we, if we, you know, get into understanding climate control of all these atomic weapons and stuff, that's it. For humanity, that's the struggle, and that's where I'd like to see things go. That's why I, you know, am pro-communism for the step forward, not something
for
that I know
forward?
Is perfect. Say what you say, Eddie.
Communist for the what cord?
Oh, communist because it's something that wants to help humanity itself. It's not for wealth being at the top. It's sharing the society, sharing things for humanity itself. That's
well, what,
the
what do you think
forward.
About the way some stereotypes are, and there may be some truth to it. For example, China, a communist country, and what's your thought about humane depictions or lack of humane depictions of communist countries, such as China?
Well, see, China is bifurcated. It has
what does
a,
that mean?
It has a communist grouping, but it's being dominated by capitalist interests. So that's something that has to be struggle with its in of itself. You follow me? It's so, and the Soviet Union, which was it's also capitalist, and that, you know, doesn't set well either, because what happens is one capitalist wants to be the boss over all the other capitalists. That leads to the road, of doom. See, so that's why we have to have people to understand what's happening and why we should not think of communism as an evil. You see, that's the point. And I always say that communism is not going to be perfect step forward, and we need to struggle that way to make things better for humanity rather than always be at one another's throat, because I have to have it all and I have to be able to boss you. That's the way, that's my outlook. And
well, what do you,
I
what
always
do you say?
Say, I didn't.
Go ahead.
Hello? Did I lose you?
Yeah, go ahead. You always say.
You were saying something. You wanted to...
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is your thought about various forms of communism around the world? For example, you said, well, China, you start talking about the pros and cons of socialism, or communism, excuse me, not socialism.
Yes.
I stand corrected, because they're different.
Right, there is.
But for communism, what do you say about the system of communism that China engages in? You said it was bifurcated, which I believe I understand. I was asking what that was for the listeners.
Yeah, parted.
But,
parted. One part is small, that's communist. The other part is larger, which is capitalist.
Right, so it's not pure communism, it sounds
right,
like.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's a mix.
The
it's
economic
a
system. System is by and large capitalist, because
okay.
That's the way it works.
So it's not pure communism that's going on there.
No,
but
no,
there are some.
It doesn't have...
there's some instances that there's some inhumane circumstances going on in China, and with them being a label-wise communist country, you know, there's that depiction of communism, you know, being bad. So can you clarify from your perspective, how is it that you know, communism isn't what it always appears to be, which is this inhumane system where you have those who have and those who have not? I think that's one of the perspectives that many negative perspectives have about communism, whereas you presented it in a bit of a different light. Can you distinguish those two perspectives of communism?
I'll try my best. It's what I said before, China, major economic system now is capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
The communist is no longer the major economic system there. And Russia, it's mm-hmm. no longer the major economic system. They are there, they're there, but they're quiet. They don't policy, you see. So technically, they're capitalists. And that's why, you know, they try, and the United States tries to blot out anything that they see is on a rise, that has on a rise with communism. I mean, that's why they're what they're doing to Venezuela, for instance. It's not that Venezuela is so strongly capitalist, but because the people in Venezuela in this system, but it's the ones who have the money who are trying to manipulate and undermine the socialist system that exists in Venezuela. You see, so that's why the blackouts, that's from the upper crust, who has control over the electrical system, you see, of giving that sort of thing. But the majority of the people there are appreciating the socialist basis of the country, just like in Cuba. Cuba was kept the way it was because when the Soviet Union declined, then Cuba was out on its own. So it had to do the best it could. It's a small country, so therefore it wasn't going to be able, you know, be able to... you know, phase off, get rid of U.S. U.S. dominance. But anyway, they isolated Cuba, see?
Mm-hmm.
They figured that it couldn't do very much, so just isolate it, see? And Cuba has done the best it could with what it has, you see? And it's kept itself afloat because of that. But in by no means, you know, are they a major power in any sense of the word. But they were what they did do to help Africa, a part of Africa, and that was it was a part of West Africa, Uganda, no. I can't think of it right now. And I have his picture downstairs in my basement. Anyway, it was Cuba who fought off the lead of the South African leadership, white leadership, fought them off and got the independence. I think it was Uganda. If I'm wrong, I'll try to correct it next time I'm on. But I'm pretty sure it was Uganda. Let's see, because it was once Southwest Africa. I'll put it that way. That name I remember graphically. It was once Southwest Africa. And it was taken over by the Germans, and when the Germans lost the First World War, it was then recouped by the West, and I think the United States had something, and England had something to do with it. But then it was fought out, and then it became independent, and I think I'm not near my books, but anyway, that made it sort of somewhat independent, but not totally, because it was still a country out on its own, and it had to develop. And, you know, I mean, the United States developed because it was England had to send troops all across the Atlantic and stuff, so they never really got a toehold in America, because it was a country that was somewhat pristine in the sense that it didn't have industrialization at the time when England first came into the country, you see. So as that happened, the Industrial Revolution had started up. So once the Industrial Revolution started up, then the Americans came into England and, you know, got information on how to build the country and the advances from Europe obtained so that they could be, you know, get on their feet. So, you know, things are different at certain periods in history for certain countries. So it's not a matter that one country is dumb. It's not that. It's a matter that at some occasions, countries get on their feet and they prosper. I mean, Rome got on its feet, but it also declined. So that's what happens. Egypt was the start of civilization and was the most dominant country in the world. But eventually it declined. Others came in and took it over. So that's how history has worked, you see, because Russia was, you know, was a very rural country for years. And eventually it got on its feet, and because the First World War, they had to get out of it because they were losing everything. Mm-hmm. And because Germany was pushing them out. So they left the war, and then 1917, they had the revolution, the communist revolution, which was led by Lenin, and mm-hmm. they started to get on their feet, and there was some help with the U.S. to help Russia at that time, because they needed the United States needed the two fronts on Germany. So therefore, the Lend-Lease that Roosevelt made up aided the Soviet Union. Once they got, on their feet, then they rose to the top, you see. So it's a matter of how things get connected, unconnected mm-hmm. and connected. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, so then back to that question that you so elaborately, I believe, addressed about, communist countries that have engaged in communism and why. What system do you see working in the world, a system of communism? You said, first of all, China, we eliminate that because that's bifurcated. But is there one
right.
that you can say is a model that seems to be working?
Well, I would say a model one would be North Korea and Cuba.
North
strongest.
Korea, you think, is working?
It is. Listen, as I said before, they don't give us the information they want us to know about successful communist countries. They don't want you to know that. I mean, that's why they have these wars. And how, they overthrow all the countries in South America they can that they see as coming forth with communism, like Brazil. Brazil was undermined to put back this Bolsonaro guy who's fascist, and the other one was San Salvador, I think. But anyway, the ones that are still there are Chile. Chile was going socialist, and what did they do? They were able to overthrow Chile with Allende. They assassinated him and took over. And U.S., corporations were down there to undermine the system. That's what they're doing with Venezuela, trying to undermine it. First, they're trying to weaken it. They want to weaken it first, then they'll attack, because they don't want too much loss of life of American soldiers, you see. So now they're working on weakening it internally, because their boy is the new guy that says he was president and the elections were phony and all that stuff. Who phonies elections? I mean, the United States phonies elections, in South America, Panama, and all of that. I mean, on and on and on and on. And this is not going to be on your news. The closest thing you can get is democracynow.org. That's the closest. And that does expose things, but then it's only there. It's not on any of the major channels. None of the major channels will touch it. And that's what we have. And, with the divisiveness of Trump, always trying to keep people separated, and, trying to keep Muslims demonized, Why are they demonized? And even the people coming up from Central and South America, they're coming up because of what the United States has done to their own countries. They're not going to explain that to us, what NAFTA and CAFTA has done to those countries. And also in the Caribbean, we had Michael Manley. They undermined him because he was a socialist. Not a communist, but a socialist. They undermined
him. Can
you him.
The difference, the subtle difference, if it's subtle, between the socialist and communist?
Well, the communist wants total control by the government for the people, though. See, the government is going to control, and eventually there should be no government, because it's going to try to work and keep people with adequate necessities that they need, adequate necessities at all chance, at all possible. There will be no capitalists, you know, reaching out and grabbing somebody else's material for little or nothing. It's the share to wealth. Now, the socialists, they like to be part capitalists, part socialists. Some things can be socialized, others can't. But when things get tight, the socialists dwindle. Because who's the boss? The capitalists. You see? So that's the little difference. Like we have this fellow running for president from, I think it's from Vermont. Yeah, I think he's from Vermont. I can't think of his name, but that is on the tip of my tongue. He just ran for president with Trump and, you know, the last election that we had much. Because, see, he's a socialist. He's not a Marxist, see. He's not going to do that. He still wants the capitalist state, but he wants more socialism. But at this point, the United States doesn't want to fool around with that stuff. They have a social welfare system. They want to keep it the way it is. They don't want it to get out of their reach, out of their hands, or anything like that. So that's why we have Obamacare rather than single-payer insurance. Have I been explicit enough, or am I still
That was helpful. That was very helpful.
Uh-huh.
Said North Korea. I think that's where we kind of stopped.
Right.
Because, as you said, before people villainize the system, they need to have a better understanding of it. And
oh, yes.
I think people are, when they think about North Korea, they think about Kim Jong-un and some of his antics, which he's known for, and, of course, him having the finger on the button of the bomb. And so I think that that's something that
people look at.
See, that's
the information we get here.
Mm-hmm.
See, we get that information. Why is North Korea can't have nuclear weapons when the West, all of the West has them? Why is it? Why is it a little Iran can't have nuclear weapons when the West has them? Trump says North Korea wants to attack the United States. That should be mind-boggling to the people. A small country like that, if he wants to attack, look like he would attack the first, because Tyre's closer. You see what I mean? That was how he wanted to phrase it, so that people wouldn't understand why he wants to keep them from having atomic weapons. He wants them not to have them so that he has them and he can dominate them.
I understand that perspective. I do.
Yeah,
I think what's being indoctrinated
is
that these are smaller countries and they would perhaps more likely utilize something because they don't have a military to cope with the military of your top three or four countries. They may be more apt to utilize something of such devastation. It's like the bully who can't fight
exactly.
but he has a gun. And I think
right.
that's the depiction there, and I think a lot of folks resonate with that. Well, I'd be afraid for someone who doesn't have the might to fight to have a gun. Because he might just, say, I tell you what, I got this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let this
right.
go. You may beat me up, but at the end of
right.
the day, take it all out. And I think that's kind of the depiction that goes on. And it's something, frankly, I believe to be thought about. But I do want to say that what you've said is thought-provoking about we need to be careful about our sources of information.
Exactly.
Especially mainstream. We have to be extremely
right.
careful. We, the grassroots, the people. I guess when I think about communism, and I appreciate that distinction, the communism is, as it's, for those who've taken sociology and some of the political sciences and studied that, and I suggest now that we have an internet, go and take a look for yourselves, listeners. Don't trust me. Don't trust Ron. As I said in the very
right.
beginning of the program, we
right.
believe in you getting the information, coming back, and participating in this discourse. We're not talking heads, and we're not trying to lead people by their nose. Go ahead, Ron.
I just want to say people should look up the word imperialism.
Mm-hmm,
that's a
mm-hmm.
word. That tells
yeah.
you,
yeah,
yeah. What's going on? Imperialism means I can take from you what I want, and I don't have to pay for it, or I'll give you whatever I want to give you for what you give me. Imperialism. I dominate your country so that I can get all I need and give you whatever is left over. Imperialism. That's the word. And that is necessitated by capitalism. Necessitated.
I guess the key
to... how do you
to,
get strong?
I guess, from my perspective, the principle on which communists rest, which is that everyone... has the same. There is equality and equity, and social classes are eliminated. What communism and socialism ideally
sure.
are supposed to
right.
be about. Now,
right.
That makes sense, I'm sure, to most people, common sense. Okay, I like that. I like to know that I have equal share of the resources, especially if you're in a resource-rich country.
Right.
And
yes.
I like the sound of that. But then how is that managed? And it is managed by a central government, and that's where communism either succeeds or fails. And,
right.
and so I think you may have talked about a little bit about the Soviet Union. They had
right.
massive poverty. Under communism, citizens revolted. Go back to the 80s. The wages that the workers had was not an equal distribution of the resources. So it really, ideally, wasn't communism as what I've heard and read communism is to be about. And I think that's where it gets fuzzy. And that's where I would need to do more research on, for example, North Korea, to see because communist countries are so closed, it's perhaps more difficult, or could be just a matter of not having access to good media. But it is somewhat true, from what I know, that access to some of these communist countries are somewhat limited, like North Korea. So
right.
I'd
right.
like to
of
get more info on that before I make a judgment call.
Yeah, but I'm saying, of course, they are at this point because of the lopsidedness of the existing capitalist system, which dominates the world. It's a domination. So, but you have to understand, why is it, if the capitalists are so dominant, why do they have to extinguish smaller countries? Why is that necessary? It's necessary because they don't want the growth and expansion of the concept of communism. Because that, to them, is demonic.
So why are you saying that
I can't take from you what I want to take? Huh?
Why are you saying capitalism is linked to the lack of access to communist countries?
Because
it sounds like you were saying, when I made a statement, communist countries, it seemed to have a lack of access to the world, to outside media or countries. There's limited access. And you said, of course, because of capitalism around the world. I thought I heard you say that. At least that's what I understood.
My question is,
how are you linking capitalism with the closed society of communism?
How do I compare them?
Now, how do you link that? How are you linking or saying it appears that that communism is not a system that often gives access to the outside world to capitalism? Because you did say, yes, of course they don't have access. They don't give access to the outside world. They don't give you access to what's going on within their society so readily. Communication
right in here
in
the
very
capitalist
limited.
System, they don't. See,
but
in the capitalist system, they don't.
But communication in some of those countries are very limited, i.e. The Internet, being able to speak freely.
Here.
Being able to go ahead.
See, it's controlled here also. See, it's controlled here for you not to understand what's happening there. Because
it doesn't seem as though they're able to communicate. We don't hear from people in North Korea. North Koreans can hear from Americans. I can get on my computer, and so can you and anyone listening here within the United States. Can reach out to someone in London, England, or Germany and communicate. But when you start trying to bridge that into countries such as Cuba or North Korea, that becomes difficult. And so it seems as though there's a closed system there.
Who's making it difficult?
That's where it becomes very gray, because
from what
we're understanding, that's why I'd like to have more access to know, you know, but you don't see that access to someone from a North Korea saying, I'm not able to use internet service beyond my community. You don't hear that, or you don't hear them saying, we are not allowed to use the internet. I don't know, but I do know that there's limited communication. And I think I'm hearing you now say, well, some of that could be based on outside countries' influence. I think I'm hearing you say that could be the reasoning. But that's just my question. Why is that limited access there? And I think that lends
The limited access,
the hype.
The limited access is also blocked by the capitalist countries.
It's blocked,
I mean,
from them communicating
to,
outside.
Right. In other words, our system controls the news media because it's for the benefit of maintaining the capitalist system. It doesn't want to have an equal debate. It's not going to allow you to have an equal debate. No way. And think about when, let's see, what's this fellow's name? Unsafe at any, say, any speed. Let's see. Shucks, I can't think of his name. That hurts my presentation immensely. Ralph Nader.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Bush, I think it was Bush running, he wanted to, you know, they were campaigning for the election, and he wanted to have he wanted to be able to speak. They wouldn't let him. They wouldn't let him go in and have a position to speak for, you know, he was running for the presidency. They told him, you can't come in for this debate. You're not part of this debate.
Mm-hmm.
They kept him out of
that.
It.
I remember that.
Yeah. And he he's no communist, but he's a critic of the capitalist system.
Capitalist. Mm-hmm.
Yes, a very good critic. See, there are other critics. I mean, you ever heard of Noam Chomsky, who's not a...
Mm-hmm.
His critique of the capitalist system is so virulent that you never hear him on any of the talk shows. Never.
Never. Never. Never.
Never.
And he's a brilliant mind.
He comes out
by
with the virulism of what capitalism is. I mean. Destroying Iraq the way they did. Iraq had supposed to have its own self-determination.